Good afternoon and welcome to BBC London News. An illegal immigrant from Afghanistan has been found hiding on a coach inside the Sandhurst Military Academy. The Ministry of Defence believes the man smuggled himself on board the vehicle as it brought soldiers back to Britain from Germany. No one spotted him until the coach was inside the gates of Sandhurst. A few moments ago, I spoke to Joe Campbell, who says the Army's top brass are furious.
Embarrassment doesn't even begin to come anywhere close to this. The fact is that this isn't just a military base, it's the Royal Military Academy. It's the place where Princes William and Prince Harry train. Within here now, of course, there will be people from other military organisations around the world. There'll be the sons of emirs and sheikhs and princes throughout the Middle East. Now, they send their sons here to Sandhurst to train, not just because it's an actual top military school, but also because they'll be safe and secure here. And events here yesterday suggest they might not be as safe and secure as they'd hoped.
Have you got any more details of how this illegal immigrant got into Sandhurst?
Well, the situation is that really they don't know a great deal at all today, other than the fact that he was on this coach. Now, it was a coach carrying soldiers from an army engineer unit in Germany. They had come through across the continent. They'd stopped in Calais. Now, the suspicion is that that might be where this Afghan joined the coach. The army says that the vehicle was from a civilian contractor, and it was up to that civilian contractor and its driver to ensure the security of the vehicle. And General Sir Richard Dennett, the head of the army, is said to be incandescent at what has happened here.
What happens to this stowaway now, then, and what happens at the base? Will there be an inquiry?
Well, the state of play is that the young man was handed over straight away to Thames Valley Police and from them to the UK Border Agency. They will then have to decide whether or not he should be returned, depending on whether or not he makes a claim for asylum. One thing we have seen already, though, if you look beyond us here at the gate, security is a lot tighter than it normally is. We're seeing vehicles being searched far more regularly. And to be honest, you know, General Dennett himself could turn up here today and he wouldn't get in without showing his military ID. They are dotting every I, crossing every T. They're following the book to the last letter of the rules today.
Joe Campbell reporting there from Sandhurst. A gunman who shot and seriously injured a commuter during an armed robbery outside Rayleigh railway station in Essex has been jailed for a minimum of 12 years. The man he shot, Adam Mapleson, had gone to the aid of a female security guard. Gareth George reports.
Tight security at Chelmsford Crown Court. Armed police on guard outside because Brian Wall, a man who made a living from armed robbery, was being sentenced. During a robbery here at Rayleigh Railway Station, Wall shot a commuter called Adam Mapleson. It was captured on CCTV. Brian Wall is marked by an arrow. He goes behind a bus. Moments later, Adam Mapleson, marked by the green arrow, arrives at the station. Behind the bus, he tackles Brian Wall and is shot in the chest. His Honour, Judge Gratwick, told Wall he was a wicked man and told him he would serve at least 12 years in prison.
Brian Wall has been described by the judge as a callous and wicked career criminal, and I fully endorse that description. He routinely carried firearms. In committing these offences, he instilled fear in his victims, and that really, he shot somebody. He shot Adam Mapleson in an effort to escape, and following that robbery he continued to commit more robberies.
This is the path the bullet Wall fired took through Adam Mapleson's body. Mr. Mapleson now has to walk with a brace in his shoe and may never fully recover. A police convoy took Wall to prison to begin his sentence. The security, a sign of the seriousness of his crimes.
Gareth George reporting. Thousands of postal workers in London are to go on strike tomorrow for 24 hours. The Communications Workers Union says Royal Mail's plans could lead to job losses. Alice Bandakravi is outside the East London Mail Centre. Will people in London notice the effect of this strike, Alice?
Well, Mike, it's difficult to say exactly how services are going to be affected. What we do know is that tomorrow up to 10,000 members of the CWU, the Communication Union, Workers Union, is going to go on strike. That's going to affect deliveries, collections and processing across London. What we are told is that services will not be disrupted in postcodes beginning with EC, WC and W1. Now, the strike is going ahead tomorrow because the union says that arbitrary job cuts could affect up to 1,600 workers and that management isn't involving the unions in the modernisation process.
So what are Royal Mail management saying about this?
Well, management say that, they point out really, that mail volumes are much lower nowadays, therefore fewer jobs are needed. And they also say that productivity in London is lower than in the rest of the UK, in fact up to 10% worse than the national average, we're told.
Okay, thanks for that, Alice. To the Olympics now, rather. You know what they are, but do you know what to expect in 2012? A new survey says most Londoners are still in favour of their city hosting the Games, but they don't know where the venues will be, what exactly will be happening, and what impact the Games will have on London after the crowds have gone. Here's Sarah Harris.
What's happening in 3 years' time?
The children at St Michael's in Camden didn't need reminding it's 3 years till the Olympics. But although a survey of 1,000 Londoners showed most are looking forward to it, they also said they didn't know enough about how to get involved. That feeling was echoed by spectators at the sports day.
At the moment now, everyone knows it's coming at 2012. They don't know how to get bookings or how to volunteer.
I think it'll be a great experience for them. Even just the day out is really fun for them. And I think it also helps them to look forward to maybe wanting to do the Olympics themselves.
I think there's not been that much information about how to get involved and how to participate, you know, just from a regular person point of view, I don't think. But perhaps some more information through the door and that kind of thing would be useful.
It is 3 years, and I think, you know, you don't want people to get, you know, exhausted and bored with the whole thing. And I think if you start doing it too soon, then people start to sort of lose interest.
The poll was carried out by London councils, who found people wanted the Olympics to leave a lasting legacy for this generation of Londoners in years to come. Sarah Harris, BBC London News.
I would like to know what you think. Have you been told enough about the Olympics? What else would you like to know? Email us at yourlondon@bbc.co.uk and we'll report back with your views and hopefully some answers in this evening's programme at 6:30. Now, we've seen the big fashion houses designing high street clothes and mobile phones. Now Chanel has made costumes for the English National Ballet. They're from the pen of Karl Lagerfeld and they're on stage at Sadler's Wells. Here's our arts correspondent, Brenda Imanis.
English National Ballet senior principal dancer Elena Gleditscher performs The Dying Swan, the beautiful ballet classic. Equally stunning, though, is her costume designed by none other than Chanel's creative director, Karl Lagerfeld.
For me, it's a healthy change. Not that it's unhealthy to do fashion, but it's interesting and exciting and inspiring to do something what is not directly related to fashion shows and things like this, you see.
This labour of love took three women over 100 hours to create and incorporates over 2,500 feathers. In addition to the exclusive costumes for The Dying Swan, Karl Lagerfeld has also created costumes for another piece, Apollo. Both are part of English National Ballet season celebrating the centenary of Ballet Russe. Chanel started their long association with ballet when Coco Chanel herself designed costumes for productions in the 1920s. The English National Ballet thought it fitting to invite Karl Lagerfeld to do the same for this tribute season.
Chanel and I were delighted to do it because both ballets I love. I love The Dying Swan, I love Apollon Misaget, but it's one of my favorite music from Stravinsky also. Independent from the ballet and the Balanchine choreography, I think it's one of the most beautiful ballets, because it's so simple.
This creative collaboration can be seen in its full glory at Sadler's Wells until the 20th of June. Brenda Imanis, BBC London News.
It's Wimbledon next week, and this year we'll see the return of Maria Sharapova. She won in 2004, but since then she's not been the player she was. An injury has dropped her world ranking down to 59th, so she has everything to play for. Chris Slegg has been to meet her.
The golden girl of tennis, as well known for her style off the court as for her talent on it. In Carnaby Street last night, modelling designs by students from the London College of Fashion.
Not quite as many people down there as there would be on Centre Court, but there was plenty of excitement. Did it feel strange, though, standing in the window like that?
Yeah, I don't always model in the window. I don't do it every day. It is definitely strange because it seems like there's no interaction. Like, all you see are just screaming fans, but you don't actually hear them.
It's hard to believe that it's 5 years since you won at Wimbledon. Is that day still fresh in your memory, that match, or was it all a bit of a blur?
The memories always come back to me, especially the first few days I come back to Wimbledon and I'm walking around the empty grounds the week before the tournament starts, or just being in the atmosphere of the Wimbledon Village, and it's such a different vibe than I get at any other tournament.
And despite recent serious injury problems, spirits remain high.
You know, the feeling of just being here for me is already a victory, so, you know, I'm just going to take it a day at a time and, you know, and try to perform well and try to go out there and play my best tennis and do what I have to do in order to win every single match.
She earns around $23 million a year, but memories of 2004 will always be priceless. Chris Legg, BBC London News.
And at the moment it seems like good weather for the start of Wimbledon, Pete.
Certainly does, Mike. I think by next week it will be a good deal warmer and a good deal sunnier. But this afternoon we're going to keep these cloudy skies and there might be the odd light shower around as well. Any rain, not amounting to very much. You'll just feel a few spots of rain on your face and then the breeze will move any showers on. Because of the cloud, we're going to be limited to around about 20 Celsius this afternoon to the top temperature in London. Now this evening, more and more blue sky will appear before the sun sets, and then overnight tonight the cloud will disappear entirely, and I think probably temperatures will end up very similar to last night, around 13 Celsius in central London, near 11 Celsius in the countryside in the surrounding counties. So tomorrow, a similar start to today, the best of the sunshine in the morning. As it warms up, the cloud will start to pop up again tomorrow. There is a small chance of catching a light shower, but the big difference, you'll notice how there's much more of that brighter land showing up. So more sunshine tomorrow. Temperatures a little bit higher, but it won't feel much warmer because, as you may have noticed, tomorrow the wind is going to be that little bit stronger. Bit of a hiccup on Saturday, some showery rain, and then that change to warmer, sunnier weather is going to start on Sunday. Back to you, Mike.
Thanks, Pete. Riz Latif will be here at 6:30. Thank you very much for watching. Goodbye for now.